You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. It is an extraordinarily gorgeous and cold day out there, and I suppose we'll all adapt after a while. But right now, I expect I'm like a lot of people, shivering between doorways. But to sort of roll right into the fall season, there have already been a lot of things that have happened. There are a lot of things that are coming up. And one of the topics that has come up a lot has been the commemoration and observation of the sesquicentennial of the Civil War and emancipation. And today, my guest is the executive director of the Tredegar Civil War Center, Christy Coleman. And before I let her talk, I do want to give you all a brief sort of update on the Occupy Richmond status at this moment. I'm not sure if something has already been reported this morning on WRIR, but basically, between 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning, the police arrived and gave the occupiers 15 minutes to move their belongings off Kanawha Plaza, which most of them did. And then they brought in bulldozers and dump trucks and scooped up the remaining tents and a library, I understand, and personal belongings of not only the occupiers, but also those people who were homeless and actually had residents there prior to the occupation taking place. So there's a lot of impact to both the occupation and the dismantling of the occupation. I believe 5 people have been arrested and are being held, being charged with trespassing after having been warned not to, and that there were 7 others who were also charged but have been released. There will be a General Assembly, or actually there was a General Assembly, and may still be going on now at 11 o'clock this morning on Kanawha Plaza, if that has actually taken place, because we do understand that the area was taped off, so we're not sure about that. But in any event, there is their website, Occupy Richmond VA, or OccupyRVA.org, and they're on Facebook. And there's also a Ustream live streaming that may be going on today as well. It certainly went on through about 2:30 this morning. So OccupyRVA.org and, of course, Facebook and Ustream. So there you go. All right, Christy.
Anna.
At long last. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Christy and I do actually serve on a committee together, and that is the Future of Richmond's Past Planning Committee, I guess. And it's been a very interesting place to be because this is a gathering of cultural institutions in Richmond and those focused on both tourism and, an interest in the state of the city. And so one of the dynamics is that we have the American Civil War Center, which focuses on the history of the Civil War from the perspective of the South, from the North, and then specifically African-American perspective. How do you see that that mission? How has that gone for you since you sort of took over in 2008 and now in the context of the sesquicentennial?
Well, I think that one of the things that would surprise people is that when the center opened to the public in 2006, it was actually the first museum to even consider the war from these 3 perspectives. The traditional approach to Civil War museums, particularly in the South, has been one that is more specific to battlefields and actions of troops and so forth and so on. So here was this museum that number one, stepped on the so-called hallowed ground, if you will, of the Confederacy's capital, and dared to give a different, and really more accurately, a more complete picture of the American Civil War. I mean, this is a conflict that still reverberates in a number of ways through our contemporary society. So the center was really important in terms of shifting that conversation, shifting that discussion in a way that we hadn't seen before. And fortunately enough, a lot of institutions in preparation for this national sesquicentennial, this dual sesquicentennial, have actually redone a lot of their work. The biggest, of course, was when Gettysburg reopened with their brand new visitor center that opened in 2008. And in fact, a number of the players that were involved with the center ended up being involved with Gettysburg to make sure that that was a more complete telling than it had been before. I think probably one of the most significant things in terms of the narrative's expansion has been more of a universal acceptance that slavery is at the core of this. Now, that may sound absolutely insane, but the truth of the matter is, again, a lot of these places, to avoid the so-called uncomfortableness of that reality, that here was a nation that went to war to preserve something, is pretty startling. Both sides were trying to preserve something.
Sure.
And then you have in the midst of that an African-American population that really was had been in a century's struggle for freedom and for human dignity. Mm-hmm. And so themselves becoming very involved in a number of ways that we just hadn't seen added to the discussion. I mean, really... you know, I'm sure we both can remember if we had anything in our general education growing up, was that if anything, African Americans were sort of secondary, if they were there at all.
Right.
Sort of the sideline slaves where this wonderful thing happened for them and mm-hmm. and then it's done. Completely taking away the agency.
Yeah.
And so again, the center brings all that back. Now, you know, I'm not gonna sit here and tell you it's all roses and light, because you know it is a challenge. It is a challenging narrative all the way around, because of the fact that we do look at the different perspectives. It doesn't necessarily mean we agree with all the perspectives, but we lay it out, and we lay it out as history,
right,
not heritage. And there's a big difference.
Oh, there is a big difference.
There's a big difference,
yes,
with that. And so,
because heritage is often what you want to pass down.
Correct. Heritage is all about inheritance.
Yeah.
It is the inheritance of either the story, the belief, the value, what have you, as
right,
well as something that's more tangible. But
right.
So it has challenged people all the way around, even folks who, you know, have grown up with the narrative that the North went to war to end slavery. Well, they didn't. Or that, you know, this was some grand egalitarian effort. It
right.
wasn't.
Yeah.
So all of the narratives get shifted a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's really fascinating. And more people are discovering the center. And we will always have our detractors. But overall, I think it is a remarkable institution. And in fact, the thing that attracted me to it was the fact that I just could not believe that such an institution was going to was actually up and running in Richmond. I mean, I just couldn't believe it.
Yeah, this would be the place where that would be hard to believe, because you've got a city that, if there was one single iconic image that it is most identified with, it is Robert E. Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And that sculpture, whose silhouette is seen in tourism guides all across the country and probably across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So to have that live. And it is interesting also, of course, the history of the site itself, Tredegar Iron Works, which was so important to the economy of the South before mm-hmm. the Civil War, through the Civil War, and for a time after the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the historic Tredegar Iron Works, and we're going to be doing more and more with this in the coming years, The Iron Works really is an amazing microcosm of what was happening nationally and in the South. I mean, it was an industrial powerhouse. One series of research reports that I read places Tredegar as the one in the top five of industrial centers. And we don't normally think of industry in the South, but it was. And here was a place that, at its height, was employing, you know, over 1,000 people, men, women, and children, of every ethnic background you could imagine, enslaved and free. And here was a place where, as you mentioned, before the war, is really helping to transform Richmond in some remarkable ways. Neighborhoods are being born out of the work that's being done. People are becoming free people because of the work of black men who are working at that site. The whole question of whether women and children should be engaged in labor is really put to the test after the explosion on Brown's Island, where 43 women and children are killed at the munitions laboratory that was there for Tredegar, where they were actually testing, you know, the cannon and the like. And so, you know, it is a place where we can explore a lot of issues beyond the war. Again, we're going to be doing a lot more with that in the coming years.
Yeah. How do you see this collaboration? You know, the future of Richmond's past is a dynamic where you have institutions that we all assume, in terms of our engagement with, you know, most museums and places, you are single entities. You look after your own sort of programs, your own mission, your own support base, attendees, and such. So how has this collaboration, I don't really want to go into how it strengthens your museum in particular, but how is this collaboration strengthening the story and the telling of it and the providing of an arena for difficult conversations?
I think the future of Richmond's past is something that the entire community can be extraordinarily proud of. I mean, you have 17, actually I think now 19, really interesting organizations. And you're right, we all have our own constituencies, we all have our own histories and so forth. But these institutions came together for the community as a whole. And I think that the decision that was made early on by the group to put aside those self-interests and say, okay, you know, here's something that's coming. We have an opportunity as a community, but we also recognize there are issues within our community that need to be looked into. There are things that we need to do as a community to make sure that when the world comes here, they see this completeness that we see. And I think that that is absolutely remarkable. And so, you know, as you well know, what we did is we kind of divided ourselves up into two teams. Mm-hmm. You know, one team that went off and looked at what are the internal dynamics in our city? What are those issues that continue to plague us in terms of having important discourse with one another?
Right.
You know, one of my favorite quotes is, you know, a good conversation gets ruined by an argument.
Yes.
And
hold that thought for one second.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. They just gave me my cue, which I asked them to do because I'm a notoriously bad timekeeper. So I just want to remind our listeners that we are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR 97.3. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. You can listen to The Defenders Live like you are now, live on Mondays at 12 o'clock, but also Tuesdays at 12 o'clock, online only. So that's WRIR.org to live stream the show, and of course on your radio dial on Mondays live at noon. If you want to know more about The Defenders, please visit our website at defendersfje.org and defendersfje.blogspot.com. And my guest today is Christy Coleman. She is the executive director of the American Civil War Center at Tredegar, Historic Tredegar. And the website for the center is www.tredegar.org. And that's T-R-E-D-E-G-A-R.org. Christy, come back to that point you were just trying to make.
Well,
if you can remember what it was.
Well, we were talking about the internal conversation. And so, you know, we had these series of really remarkable public forums, if you will. And for those of you that weren't able to come out, you know, they still are happening in a lot of different ways. And so from those conversations, we learned just how much our community didn't know about the histories, the stories, the gaps in the stories that they wanted told. And it empowered that 1,200 plus people that participated in those conversations to reach out to public and personal connections to say, we've got to do better. And, you know, these are some things that need to be done. So, you know, there becomes extra impetus to making sure that the Lumpkins jail archaeology site is given its due. You know, and that's has been a fight, as I understand it, that's been going on for years and finally got the extra help that, you know, of all of that hard work to move it forward. And then there was the external group who was charged with or is charged with working with the public officials and the tourism industry as a whole to make it easier for people to experience these stories and sites. And so everything from brand marketing with the Richmond Metro Convention and Visitors Bureau, we'd like to think that we had some influence with the mayor finally making a decision for Richmond to have its very first tourism coordinator being assigned this year, because the city had never invested in tourism for the city outside of their contributions to RMCVB.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah. You know, that a metropolitan area like ours has never had anybody actually selling the city.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these kinds of things also move into a better signage to help people get around in the city.
That's right.
There's even conversation about this insane one-way driving system that we have. So those conversations are also taking place. How do we make it easier to navigate this city and to get to all of these remarkable places?
Right.
And so, and when I say remarkable places, I'm not talking about just the 19 partners. It is really a community-wide effort. So I'm really, really pleased to have been a part of that, or to be a part of that. And I'm looking forward to what we do next, quite frankly.
I think so. I mean, in the course of listening to you just now, it occurs to me that, there, you, as you just said, we have these 19 institutions, and it's not just that. But what we also have in a way that other places I'm sure have this, but the city itself is actually a cultural institution. There, there are so many places where you cannot walk without putting your feet on actual historic ground and, you know, touch a wall that can transport you back in such a way that it also connects to the fact that we also have a population, if not so much in the city, certainly throughout the state of Virginia, that that are absolutely living legacies of the history of the state. You know, so much so that you can go to some place like Southampton County, where Nat Turner's rebellion took place, and still find people who, you know, debate that, if not publicly, certainly if you push them in any certain direction, like public manifestations of recognition. When you were talking about Gettysburg being, you know, a remarkable development in the way that it has reopened, there's Harper's Ferry. That kind of blew my mind,
because
we, you know, nobody talked John Brown. You could hardly bring John Brown up in a conversation without, you know, people wanting to break out the blue and gray again.
Right.
So it's the place itself is the history is so palpable, and it sort of brings me to that other topic that I wanted to sort of bring up. And I think it's a difficult topic because maybe it hasn't been explored as much. But, you know, we are a nation, I think, struggling with its identity because of so many of the contradictions that are now at this moment being focused on in terms of the economic contradictions in the country. But Virginia and then Richmond has struggled with its identity after having been the capital of the Confederacy and now having such a population of new people from other parts of the country living here. And our struggle with really a black-white history as we have experienced it and understood it, and what that means as a microcosm of the country's moral compass. We had slavery. We are having to face the fact that this country was built upon slavery, and what that has meant, not just economically, because that, of course, is profound and intrinsic, but also culturally. What has it meant to be a slaveholding society, and what has it meant to come out of that? How do we reconcile that to what people are doing now, which is reaching back to the founding fathers' principles, so to speak, looking, I think, for a way to believe that this country has always had the best ideas in mind if they have not known how or have purposefully used them discriminately. This observation, it's interesting how it's all of these conversations, I think, are coming up in this sesquicentennial, 150 years since. If it's in part because of what's happened in the last 50 years. So much was different during the time of the 100, the centennial, about that commemoration that absolutely and completely disregarded any other history except a kind of reverence or mythology around the antebellum era and what that legacy for the Civil War has meant. But, you know, it is a giant, I mean, maybe that's the problem here, is that it's such a giant question that I'm asking. It's like, what are you really asking, Anna?
Well, let me do my very best to
jump in there and carve something out.
Okay. First of all, you're right. Part of the dynamic that we experience as Americans is that we have always struggled from the beginning of this nation with our ideology versus our practice. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, because it means that you are constantly striving for something else. And you stumble and you fall and you make bad choices or you make good choices, or the moments of greatness are presented and they are seized. So, you know, while there are people that would love to say, well, they didn't mean this and they could have done that and they didn't, and therefore I don't have any respect for any of those people. Come on, give me a break. The bottom line is, we're talking about men who put together a system of ideology that in and of itself was dynamic, in that it wasn't just a country that was going to be based on Judeo-Christian principle. It was a country that was also being built on a Greco-Roman model of governance. It was a system that was based on the general notion that there should be some level of merit. A man should be able to rise to his level and achieve something. Mm. This was radical. It was an extraordinarily radical new thing that has managed to survive ups and downs and battles along the way for 200 plus years. And so I'm one of those American idealists. Mm. And when it comes to the American Civil War, and granted, you know, and I live with our ugliness of our history every day. It is my chosen profession. And it's my chosen profession because it speaks volumes that we are still here. And we're still having this conversation. And the new conversations that are taking place, you talk about Occupy Richmond and all of the other movements that are out there, whether they're Tea Party, whether they're Occupy, you know, whether they're the Coffee Party, whether they're whatever the thing is, the fact is people are engaged and they are thinking about things. And all of this is the legacies of how do we continue to balance an individual freedom versus a common good? Mm. How do we continue to try to find a balance between the role of a centralized government versus local rule? How do we allow a person to rise to their own ambitions without having impediments, but recognizing that there may be? You know, we see all of these injustices, but I think that it becomes important for us to remember that there are still remarkable things and remarkable lessons of success that are also in this mix. Now, when we talk about specifically black and white tension that is Richmond, that is old, and it is built on, I have to tell you, and I may have shared this with you personally before, when I first came back to Virginia and moved to Richmond specifically, I was meeting with this businessman and he said, I have to tell you, Christy, that if nothing else, I want you to think about this. The Richmond was built on two lies. The first lie was that slavery was good for black people, and the second lie was tobacco won't kill you. And he said, once you understand that this is a community that has been built in a system of denial,
yes.
breaking that takes time. And it reminded me of a professor from, I think she was from Eastern Kentucky University. Her name was, I'll never forget her though, her name was Dr. Myra Gordon. And Myra said, the fact of the matter is, slavery, the war, and all of that is really, it was a national trauma. And as with any trauma, there are the five stages of grief.
Mm.
And she said, and we are, as a nation, in different levels of that thing. So some of us have reached a point of acceptance. Some of us are still in a state of denial that it ever happened. Some of us are still trying to bargain.
Right.
Over this
that's
history.
Right, that's right.
And so she said, as long as you understand that,
right.
it becomes easier to maneuver through it.
Right, right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, I wish we had more time.
Yeah.
We've got, I think, about 45, 47 seconds left.
So I shall leave it to you. Yeah, I can talk, honey. This should
hey,
be an hour show.
This is good. Yes, absolutely. We'll petition for that because let me just let people know again, it's Tredegar.org is the website for the American Civil War Center, the place which seeks to tell the story from the Northern, Southern, and African-American perspective, and which is deeply and I think very frankly engaged in some of these conversations. And I think a very good place to start if you have never explored these ideas before. And I think it goes to the idea that there is a point of entry for everyone.
Right.
And sometimes that point of entry is simply compelling and potentially joyous, and sometimes that point of entry is tragic and and bears all the work and comfort and and companionship along the way that we can bring to it. So I really want to thank you for coming here and starting our conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. And
enjoyed it.
And so we will see people, we will look forward to the next Civil War Day, which is next April, and otherwise people can check your website for the current exhibits. And so there's very compelling stuff going on there. Thank you, Christy, again.
Thank you, and I've appreciated it.
And thank you all for tuning in today. We will try to be back with you next week with more of a report about what's happening with Occupy Richmond. Christy herself actually brought up a couple of interesting comparatives. But thanks for tuning in. Keep up the struggle and remember that kindness does matter. Thanks.
You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.